Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Dr. Charlampos Kalodimos is professor in the Department of Biochemistry, Molecular Biology, and Biophysics at the University of Minnesota. He visits SDSU in Brookings as the 2017 Henry A. Lardy Distinguished Lecturer in Chemistry. You can see him tonight at the South Dakota Art Museum Auditorium in Brookings at 5:30 p.m. Central Time. Dr. Kalodimos, welcome to In the Moment.
Hi, how are you?
I am doing well. Welcome to South Dakota.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you very much.
I want to talk a little bit about your background before we talk about your current research. And I'm wondering, when did you first have an idea that you really wanted to be a scientist? Was it quite young?
Yes. I mean, usually that's how it starts. You know, when you are young, you have all this curiosity, how things do really function and work. I wasn't quite sure whether I would like to go into becoming a physician or do actually research. So I did a MD, PhD, and then I decided, in fact, that I would like to stay in biomedical research and then do actual research in a lab as opposed to a hospital.
And what sort of sparked that love of the research itself that made you want to make a career of it?
Well, it's really being the first one to discover something, and my own research is in the field of structural biology, where we try to really go at the very deep, at the atomic level, and then get all these very beautiful high-resolution structures, as we call, of proteins or DNA, understand how things really function, and then being the first one to discover, then being able to visualize really how things do work. I think this is really amazing. And then each time we reach a milestone, we usually, you know, like we open a champagne and we all celebrate in the laboratory.
There's champagne involved in science. Who knew?
Oh,
right?
Well, yes, you have to, you know, you have to. It's like hours.
Yeah, what's worth celebrating? Like what, you know, what's significant enough to where you say this one is worth really, you know, gathering and honoring the moment?
Yeah, that's right. That's a good question. So usually in our science, when we reach a major milestone and then we publish our discoveries actually in these very high impact journals for example, when you get like maybe a $5-6 million grant from the National Institute of Health, anything that, you know, it's probably closer to the end of a long journey. This usually happens maybe after 2 or 3 or 5 years of intense research in a certain field. And that, yeah, so that's basically.
All right. Tell me what you're going to talk about when you're in town tonight.
So tonight I'll be talking about major advances in the field of basic biomedical research, how that really has allowed us scientists to better understand how human body really functions, and then when something goes wrong, how, of course, you know, we can get all these terrible diseases, and then how basic biomedical science can really help tackle and, in many cases, really cure these diseases. So it will be a very basic approach. So no science background is really required in order to follow that. There will be some very nice animations about how the human really body works and in the cell level, and then how, for example, I'll highlight a couple of diseases and then how just very simple things can happen and then, unfortunately, you know, like can give rise to these diseases.
How much do we not, you know, if you just had your high school science or maybe a little bit of college science, how much do we not really understand about how the body actually works at the cellular level? Is there a lack of understanding?
Yeah, actually, we understand very little. And as it goes, you know, like the more you get into that, the more you think, the more you discover, the more you realize actually that you don't understand how things really function. And then that, of course, is that even applies to like very simple organisms like bacteria. And then, of course, in many cases, we use bacteria as model systems to understand how, of course, more complicated systems like humans, for example, do really function. Yes, I mean, certainly we are very limited. It's like our knowledge is very limited. Of course, there's major efforts going on the entire planet, getting more and more of this information. But certainly it will take more and more decades, you know, like more decades really to come to understand more of this about how it's really functioning.
So when you talked about those sort of beautiful high resolution images, what are you able to see now and see how it works that maybe 10 years ago we weren't able to visualize?
Yeah, so now that's a good question. So now, in fact, we do start looking at even higher resolution, but also more importantly, tackle much more challenging systems. For example, way back, we're able to do just very small proteins, maybe one at a time. But we know that you need all these very big machineries in order to understand how they function. So it's like really like, you know, you look how an entire engine, for example, of a car really works, all the different parts, while before, for example, we're only able to see this one from far apart, seeing a car drive by, and then all you can tell is that, oh, you know, yes, that can really move, but how it really moves, we don't really know. So you need all these bits and parts. You need to go to really very deep and understand how that really works, and that's what we are able actually to do nowadays with all very high-resolution structures. And I have to say that this is not just, you know, of course, simple curiosity. It's just that structural biology has given us the tools now to go interrogate the systems and then, of course, improve significantly the drug discovery program. There is always something that I teach to my students about aspirin, for example. Aspirin has been around for over 2,000 years. People were using this one, extracting this one from willow trees back in ancient Greek. But of course, you know, until very recently, people had no idea how it functions. You know, they gave it for fever, inflammation. But of course, you know, you also knew that has all these detrimental effects, you know, like in stomach by causing ulcers. So through structural biology, we found out that aspirin, in fact, targets two enzymes. Okay, and then one of the enzymes is a good one, and it's not supposed to target. So you look into these high-resolution structures, you understand the differences, very, very tiny differences between the two enzymes, and now you have improved drugs like Celebrex, for example, or these new drugs that do not inflame the stomach. So then through structural biology, we're able to improve the, you know, like drugs. And now, you know, people actually get drugs that don't cause this kind of ulcers in the stomach.
Wow. So you can look at something that really a scientist in ancient Greece was considering the healing properties of, take it to its next level, and then lay the groundwork for a scientist centuries from now to come up with the next step toward advancement and understanding how the human body works. Is that...
Exactly.
That's how the chain of events works in science. What is it like for you to sort of stand on the shoulders of those giants and also know that the things that you're doing now might not be realized fully in your lifetime?
Yes, I mean, you know, you always have, I guess, to approach something in deep humility, and you think that sometimes you understand something that may not really be the case. You just work hard. You do what inspires you to do as a scientist, to improve everybody's life, everybody's, you know, like daily activities, and then, of course, health, and then cure disease. And then you only hope that in the future, but also, you know, in the present, that other people can take it from where you left it and then just, you know, progress. That's how science functions. That's actually how it works.
Is it competitive? Is it a competitive line of work to be in?
Oh, yeah, actually, it's extremely competitive. It's extremely competitive, yes. There's no question about that. I mean, it's competitive in terms of, you know, who actually gets to find something first, or also it's very competitive, for example, who gets the money, who gets the funds from the National Institute of Health, because you need the resources, you need, of course, you know, like to pay people, you need all these funds in order to progress as fast as possible.
Do you thrive on that competition? Or is
Absolutely.
It, yeah, what do you like about it?
I mean, that's why I'm here. That's why I'm in this country. I mean, I did most of my studies, actually, and then I got my diplomas in Europe. But then I realized at some point that, especially as a junior faculty, junior professor, this is really the place to be. This is the country really to be. They, you know, you come here, they don't, you know, nobody really cares what your background is, you know, how you look like. The only thing they care is whether you are the best for the job. So you come here, they give you the tool, but then you know that there's nothing to complain. So if you fail, there's no one to complain. If you do well, then you get the entire credit. and then you just actually keep going. I mean, personally, yes. I mean, I work more than 12 hours a day in my lab. Most of my people do that. We are actually a 24/7 lab functioning, and yeah, we love actually what we do.
Mm. Is that what drives you to do the 12 hours a day, just loving it as well?
Yes, exactly. Yes, I mean, I have of course a family, and I have kids, and then of course I like to spend more and more time with them. But we understand this is an extremely competitive field, and then I think when you love, you know, what you do, is just, you know, like you are stuck there trying to find out how that really things actually work. And of course, they pose severe challenges, but then the more challenges you get, I guess, you know, like the more you'd like to work harder to understand how things really work.
So what's happened when you go into your lab? What is it? Describe the scene to me. What kind of work is being done there on a daily basis?
Well, I mean, depends. I have like a large group of people, so then each individual in the lab, of course, are assigned with different functions. But they have to start what we call from scratch, where you have to do all these DNA discovery and then get the DNAs and then produce proteins. And then for our kind of the type of research we do, which we use is very large magnets, like the MRI type magnets, I guess people are familiar with. Mm-hmm. We have to use special conditions for that and put the proteins inside these huge magnets, and then use basically physics in order to be able to get this high-resolution structure. So you have to produce first your samples. Of course, you have to identify what the biological system you are working is, what is the challenge, what is the question you are after, why you would like to determine a high-resolution structure. Is that for a drug discovery, is for something else? And then you just keep doing that.
Are you looking for multiple projects going on at once,
yes,
or do you
absolutely.
Focus on one thing? What's the advantage of having, you know, several irons in the fire, several, you know, inquiries going on at the same time?
Yeah, I guess, you know, to the extent you stretch that, and then I think different labs have different approaches. Some labs have only one project and they focus on that. We have several projects, and then we try, of course, to get into details of this one. That certainly carries some risks, because then you get somehow diluted. But then if I think the larger the group you have, and then the more fans you have, then I think you can tackle that. Certainly we have been very fortunate to have several million dollars grants from a year from NIH. So that gives us, in fact, the tools and the resources to be able to tackle several projects at the same time.
And are you looking for causes? Are you looking for treatments? Things going on?
That's right. Yeah, we start usually. It depends on the project. But for example, one of the big ones to do is on BCR-ABL. This is a protein that causes CML, which is chronic myelogenous leukemia. And then we try to. And then there are drugs out there. We have been able, in fact, to contribute on one of them. But then what happens is that many patients actually do develop drug resistance. Mm-hmm. And then we try to understand why this really happens. And structural biology has proven extremely efficient in this way, because we can understand why certain patients do not respond to the drugs, and then how new drugs need to be designed in order now to, you know, like, even treat these patients that have developed this resistance.
University of Minnesota is a good spot for your work and for students to head to and try to figure things out in their science careers.
Yeah, Minnesota. Yeah, Minnesota actually is a great it's a great environment. They have invested tremendously in basic science, and the NMR and MRI magnet is probably one of the best, very very best places in the country to do this kind of research.
All right. Dr. Kaladimos is professor in the Department of Biochemistry, Molecular Biology, and Biophysics at the U of M. He visits South Dakota State University as the 2017 Henry A. Lardy Distinguished Lecturer in Chemistry. You can see him tonight at the Art Museum in Brookings, 5:30 p.m. Dr. Kaladimos, thank you so much.
My pleasure.